From the Theater Talk studio at WBFO, this is the Press Pass podcast. I'm Mark Scott, and you can now call me Grandpa. And I'm joined by Buffalo Spree editor Elizabeth Licata.
Congratulations, Granddad.
It was great. I mean, it's so much different from having your own child to welcoming a grandchild. Francis Joseph, 8 pounds, 1 ounce.
Oh, wow. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Very good. So you'll be babysitting, you'll be visiting here a lot.
Yeah. We'll be heading to...
I can tell you guys are going to be those kind of grandparents.
They already need us. We'll be there the first week in October. But moving on to our discussion for this press pass, the Borderland Festival at Knox Farm State Park is less than 2 weeks away. It's the weekend of September 21st and 22nd, and I've heard much coverage of this from WBFO's Nick Lippa. Your September issue includes a couple of articles. What is contributing to the popularity of Borderland after just 1 year?
Well, it's just a really thoughtful, I think that's the word I would choose for it, thoughtful festival. They've really brought in a lot of fantastic local entities who you would never expect to even see at a festival, such as the Buffalo Maritime Center or Stitch Buffalo, as they're sort of, instead of just like, you know, the people with the booths selling, you know, knickknacks and it's not that kind of festival where, you know, with fry dough and that kind of thing. It's just like a really local, really thoughtful festival that engages the local community. They are very environmentally aware in terms of the kind of litter they leave behind. They're very careful about that. And they have a great musical lineup, which is the main thing, of course, headlined by Mavis Staples. I heard this festival was fantastic last year. And I've noticed that as we continue to build new things in Buffalo, the new things get a lot of buzz, and people get excited about the new festival in town, and I think that's certainly the case with Borderland.
Well, we have plenty of art festivals where there are live music performances, but this is unique because it's a music festival that features, as you have mentioned, a lineup of artisans that are as big, as stellar as musicians on stage.
Well, yeah, Thomas Pack. Path from Roycroft, who's this amazing furniture maker. I would not expect to see him at a festival like this. I don't even see him, I don't think, at the Allentown Art Festival. Normally you have to go down to East Aurora to see him, his work, and then also some really interesting contemporary artists like Scotty By. I'm looking forward to. He's going to be building like a big, during the festival, he's going to be building like a big sculpture, and he mainly uses discarded wood and things like that, reuses stuff to make really fascinating abstract sculptures. So I think there's things going to be going on during this festival that you can watch and learn from and be entertained by just as much as by the music.
Mavis Staples, yes. R&B, but this is largely a folk and bluegrass.
Bluegrass and that kind of music, very popular here. I mention Sportsmen's, you know, so we have a lot of and many, many other clubs throughout Buffalo. And this is a kind of music that has always been big in Buffalo. So big festival. It's going to be popular.
Now, this is a 2-day festival on farmland.
Right.
I can't help but see parallels to Woodstock, which just marked its 50th anniversary.
Yes. Maybe that's some of the buzz around it, but I don't get like a Woodstocky feel from this. That's not really what I get from it. I just get from that they've really, the people who put on this festival have made it. People in Buffalo love having what we celebrate in Buffalo celebrated at our festivals. So that's why, of course, you have the Elmwood Avenue Festival of the Arts comes along after the Allentown Festival, saying we're more local, if they are or not, doesn't really matter. But we're a Buffalo. They're trying to make themselves like a quintessential Buffalo festival. And I think that is what people appreciate.
Borderland is not the only significant event happening in the South Towns that weekend, because the Buffalo Bills play their home opener at New Era Field on Sunday the 22nd. And your September issue celebrates Bills fandom.
Yes, it does. We do sports, you know, not as regular. We can't do sports like you do it here or like the Buffalo News do it. We can't do play-by-play. We can't cover a game the day after it's taken place. We can't do any of that. We're writing about things that haven't happened 2 months before they happen, and we can't really cover a game in January, you know, that happened in November. No one really wants to read that. But what better way to do, you know, Buffalo people love their sports, they love their Bills, they love their Sabres. The fans, the people, that's what we took up, and the lengths to which people will go to celebrate the Bills and make it a whole cultural thing out of it, from tailgating to face painting, to those people who live out of town, all the Bills bars that there are throughout the U.S. and probably throughout the world.
Do you think Buffalo is unique, or do you see this kind of thing in other cities with NFL clubs?
Well, I think if you look as closely at Pittsburgh, you can see they have an extraordinary fan base there. But I have heard, and I don't know if you would know better than I have heard that the Bills are known for having the most loyal, huge fan base, one of the most in the NFL. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I have heard.
No, that's true.
It's been written.
Kansas City's another one, but there
yes,
are
absolutely.
There are cities like Los Angeles where the teams, two teams in Los Angeles, but they're rooting for USC there, from what I understand.
I was just seeing something on Facebook about how lackadaisical people who go to Yankees games are, and how quickly those spectators will leave the game when they get bored with it. They don't really seem like rabid fans.
Yeah.
So, but I think that the Bills fans are extremely loyal. I'm personally, I do not attend Bills games regularly, but my family members do, and they are on that Sunday. Nothing else is happening.
Are you a fan? I mean, do you watch the games, or do you, they
I've
don't
been
really
once or twice.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, it's you know, I have other hobbies and interests. Not sports is not really one of them.
Well, I'd be interested from your reader's point of view. Spree is known for its excellent coverage of food, arts, mm-hmm. and culture. When you put sports on the cover, do you hear from readers saying, you know, hey, this is great, or do you hear critics? What are you doing? Why do you have to read this?
Well, I think it is culture.
Okay.
It's, you know, a different kind of, you can call it pop culture if you want, but there's a whole culture to being a fan and the rituals that surround it. I mean, and any number of academics could write books and books about sports fans and you know, the rituals of fandom. So I find it interesting. I definitely find it intellectually interesting. And it's fun. And we're all about the fun. You know, we like mm-hmm. fun. We don't turn down fun. It's free.
Yeah. Well, talking about that, I'm a diehard fan.
Of course you are.
I love the tradition. I watched a video the other day narrated by Marv Levy celebrating 60 years of Buffalo Bills football this year. I was at some of the games shown in the video clips in that video. Our grandson was 24 hours old, and the three of us, my son, Francis, though he didn't understand, and I were in the maternity ward watching the Detroit game. He was in his Bills onesie.
Yeah.
Anthony had his Bills T-shirt on. So we're fans, yet
yes.
I despise the arrogance of the NFL and the millionaire owners who hold communities hostage, demanding lavish taxpayer-funded stadium and palaces. And I suppose I'd need a therapist,
you know,
to sort out these feelings.
I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, having grown up with absolutely brothers who are all football and basketball players and all fans of the Bills and my parents who had season tickets. But as someone who's a Buffalonian and who observe what goes on in our city, the whole idea of giving all this money for a stadium where there's going to be 8 events or whatever for a team and nothing else, it just seems absurd to me. And there's I mean, the books are out there about the economics and about the kind of economic benefit that these absolutely do not provide for their municipalities. They provide enormous psychological benefit. One cannot deny that. But I'm with you there, absolutely, Mark. And maybe that's one of the reasons I haven't been able to get into it. It
mm-hmm.
could be.
Yeah. I read with interest your timeline of the 1960s AFL days.
Yes.
A purer time. I mean, some of the players who played during that era had to have part-time jobs to make ends meet. And I'm of an age where I was at War Memorial Stadium for a handful of games. I remember where I was for many of the things you mentioned in your timeline. In fact, I was watching a video the other day of the Bills-Jets game in 1965, Joe Namath's first game, and I looked at the player numbers, and I knew all their names.
And that was when the Bills actually won a couple of championships, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes, our writer, Bruce Eaton, of course, he doesn't really wasn't really interested in the whole fan thing, but this is something that he has down and has written about for us before.
Yeah,
it was really interesting to me, too.
And what's interesting, I'll meet a roster on Sunday when I watch the Bills on TV because I don't know all the local, the current player numbers and even who some of these people are of the current team.
This is why we cover the general topic of Bills fandom, because if we were to zero in on a certain player or something, we can't guarantee that that player will still be around when the issue comes out.
Yeah. So interesting. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Before we wrap up, let's touch on an exhibit opening at the Castellani Art Museum on September 19th. That celebrates Buffalo Gallery owner Nina Freudenheim. And you know, I've probably referenced that gallery so many times in never been there, and I never stopped to think that Nina Freudenheim is a living, breathing person who has had such an impact locally.
Oh yes, very much so. Nina's been involved. Nina started her gallery back when Hallwall started, back in 1974-75, and it remains as one of the few or only long-running commercial gallery, which is most of our art galleries and museums in Buffalo, of course, are nonprofit. Well, museums always are, but our art galleries, the little storefronts that you see on Allen Street, they're mainly nonprofit, or they may be technically profit, but really nonprofit.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and they're great ways. But Nina Freudenheim has brought in internationally renowned artists. She's one of the most meticulous installer of artworks that I have ever known, and in her quiet way she has influenced so many collectors here and so many museums, and artworks that came into Buffalo through her means have found their way into museum collections, and they certainly have at the Castellani, where,
and
as you know, I worked for 10 years,
and they're going to be showcasing those works in this exhibit.
Yes, and I know all those works intimately. They're fantastic. And the work that we show a picture of, you can't tell this from looking at the picture. That is a 14-foot-high artwork, and there's another one that matches it. Just magnificent, huge paintings that will be in the grand main gallery of the Castellani, which is a magnificent space if you've never seen it, which you should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much I have to get to and see in this community that before the clock runs out. Elizabeth, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. I am a grandfather after all.
Well, it's been around there since the new gallery is 1991.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about 28 years that you had a chance to go and look at the new marble gallery that Armin built there. And it's just a really nice space. It's people think it's 15 minutes. It's like 15, 20 minutes.
It's close.
It's close, yeah.
Mark Scott, WBFO News.
And we're still talking?
Yeah.
I didn't know we were still talking. I thought you and I were just talking. Please take all that out.
No, this is cute. This is fine. Goodbye.